This is exactly right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
That's what parents need to learn is what we're taught in the media about parenting. It's not about having, you know, everything you see on social media. It's about how do you want to feel? How do you want your child to feel? And really walking this path with them, not necessarily knowing how to answer all the problems, but like advocating, using your voice, communicating. And the more you do on yourself, the more work you do on yourself, the more you can be present for them.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for us parents to seek the same in our own lives while striving to be the best versions of ourselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is Beating Working Parent Overwhelm by Managing Your Energy Instead of Your Time with our guest, Heather Chauvin. Heather is a leadership coach who helps ambitious, overwhelmed women break free from their fears to courageously and authentically live, work, and parent on their own terms. She's a TEDx speaker, author of Dying to Be a Good Mother, and host of the highly loved podcast, Emotionally Uncomfortable, with well over 9 million downloads to date and counting. Heather started her career as a social worker, helping adults understand children's behavior. But it wasn't until 2013 when a stage 4 cancer diagnosis pushed her to take a deeper stand for change, uncovering how cultural expectations sabotage our dreams. She's been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Real Simple Magazine, MindBody Green, Google, and more. When Heather isn't working, you'll find her living out what she teaches, which may include kayaking Alaska, snowboarding, hiking, or anything else that challenges what she believes is possible for herself. And of course, inviting her children along the journey. Heather, welcome to the show.
Dan, thank you for having me. I love it when people do the intro and I'm like, oh, good. I don't have to tell the story now.
No. Well, I went back and forth with a little teaser of the story or, you know, launching, yeah, having you tell it. So I wanted to tease it. And actually, that is where I wanted to start because it is so significant. And I was so moved by your TEDx talk, the picture of you that looks like you're pregnant and you were not pregnant. You had stage 4 cancer. And I was trying to put myself in your situation with children and that place in life and just wondering, how did you do it? How did you, like, the fear, the courage, the resolve, all of it? So tell us, please.
Well, it's interesting. That was 10 years ago. And when I look back, I still ask myself that question of like, how did I get through that? And there's definitely a part where I don't remember a lot. I think I always tell people when you are living in your comfort zone, and your comfort zone may be like a crisis zone, but when you are living in your comfort zone, we tell ourselves that we can't do something. And the power of like perseverance and what we actually are capable of humans when we are feel like we're backed into a corner is beyond our wildest dreams. Like, we have so much more in us and we just never give ourselves permission to tap in. So you do what you need to do, like from a survival state. But in my book, Dying to Be a Good Mother, I took that picture. That was a few days before I started treatment. And I make a comment in my book about how I have a smile on my face. Like, it's a side profile and my abdomen is out. And it's like, take a picture, say cheese and smile. And inside I was physically dying. The tumors were growing so rapidly. My stomach, that was within like a week or two. Like, I had abdominal bloating and then instantly it grew so fast. And my stomach got bigger and bigger. So you do what you need to do to survive.
And realizing the outer reaches of human experience and human potential, as you point out, it's like those experiences which make one realize you have to push beyond. And you mentioned comfort zone. I think what I've often called it sort of familiar misery that lots of us stay in. You know, it's familiar, it's not great, but this is what we know. And unless we have this sort of earthquake at times, this major life experience, near-death experience, for many of us, it's hard to break out of that sphere that we're living in.
There's two. So oftentimes when people are asking me about this moment, they're like, was that your like aha moment? And it wasn't. Actually, becoming a mother was my first kind of, I don't know, spiritual awakening or cracking open. And I was 18 when I became a mom, and that was 9 years before my diagnosis. So all of this, of course, happened young in my life. And there's, you know, looking back, I can just see the reasons why in hindsight of like living in survival state and all the things. But the interesting part was I was into personal development, like parenting. I got into conscious parenting and taking responsibility for myself and being like, what's the, like, I was on the journey for 9 years. And my diagnosis was actually me giving myself permission to live. And as a woman and as a mother, and I know that this is not just gender-based, like all humans struggle with this, but I was seeking mentorship. I was seeking role models. And what I was actually observing from other women, because I'm just coming from the human experience as a woman, I could not find a lot of women who were feeding themselves, like their mind, their body, their souls, while doing what they wanted to do in the world and also feeling like they were succeeding at parenting. And I know that's like a succeeding at parenting, but feeling proud of how they were showing up. And I deeply desired to be that person, but I could not find a lot of role models. And so cancer, I was like, I'm checking the suffering box. I am done. And if that means actually opting out of a toxic culture of motherhood, of who I need to be and give, I will do that. And I will be the leader that I most desire other women to be of how they show up as in their parenting, in their lives, in themselves. So fighting to get out of that, that was a journey in itself.
So if you could do it for yourself, you could help others do it too.
Of course, but I never started doing it for myself.
So was there a parallel process as you are developing your coaching skill set, developing your ideas about, you know, how to go, for lack of a better word, counterculture, like let's get rid of all of this BS, and you're teaching it while you're learning to do it yourself?
So I always believe in being on the other side of something or a few steps ahead of someone else. And I really do believe in practicing what you preach, because there's a lot of leaders out there who preach something and then you're like, but you're not living it. And so living what the message that you desire other people to have is very, very important for me to come from a place of integrity. So also you can understand how difficult it is, how emotionally uncomfortable it is, and not just give a 5 easy step process. But it was when I started my career, like my foundation is in social work, and I was working mm-hmm. with families, and I could see and understand, you know, I was observing families trying to get out of these cycles and how we were just labeling and we were just projecting onto them, but nobody was like guiding them. No one had like empathy or compassion. Mm-hmm. And then here I am going home, not like still yelling at my own children. And so as I was going through my process, I'm like, why is everyone making this look so easy? It's not. You have to like every single day lean into how you want to feel. But when I started, it was very much child focused. It was parenting. That's all. And then after my diagnosis, I was like, we need to stop pretending and be so child focused. Like, yes, but we are part of the equation. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, like we're definitely not going to be able to be present for our children.
Yes. Yes. We are speaking, we are singing to the same people here, because our world has gotten so, I don't know what year, what decade, when parenting kept emerging as an actual thing, as a, this huge, like larger than life thing. And all of a sudden everything became about kids with the thinking that that was good. And we know that too much focus on kids is not good. And we now very much know with this latest wave of work and literature that when we are not focusing on ourselves, it's not only not good for ourselves, it's not good for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have swung the pendulum of like, children are seen and not heard.
Yes.
To like, I am, and then usually you've finish the sentence with so-and-so's mother, so-and-so's father, so-and-so's caregiver. Like we mm-hmm. have lost our identity completely.
Right.
A lot of the parents that I talk to, mainly women, it's their life, their finances, their weekends are revolved around their children in this over-scheduled life. Mm-hmm. And I talk about being emotionally uncomfortable all the time and a lot about emotional intelligence. And my kids, I'm raising three boys. They're now 19, 14, and 11. And the second they started shifting into like becoming a teen, I realized that my relationship with them had to shift, but also my kind of identity of like, I am not here to control everything that you do. I am here to guide you. And a mm-hmm. huge part of that is helping you learn the skill of mm-hmm. managing the contrast of your big emotions. I cannot take them away from you. You have to experience them fully and know mm-hmm. how to manage them. And I think mm-hmm. we swung from that because so many people, that was my story. I didn't want my children to feel the way that I felt as a child.
Right.
But they actually have to feel that. I just need to show up differently for them.
Yes. The only way kids can learn to regulate emotions is if they have them and have the experiencing of needing to regulate them. Right. And I also think about what you're saying, and this is so true, just about how our kids become part of our identity. And I don't think many parents, and again, the parents who are in this boat, which is anyone listening, because you're a caring parent, it comes from a place of goodness, right? Like I want the best for my kid. I don't want my kid to suffer like I did. And we don't realize over time, the person we were, which was a person at some point without a child, becomes a huge part of how we define ourselves. And I think it's really insidious, because then how our kids are doing or not doing then somehow becomes a reflection of who we are as people, how we're doing as our job. And if we don't decouple those, we're not giving our kids the space to grow, as you point out. And we're not being healthy ourselves, focusing on our own growth and development as separate individuals.
Mm-hmm. I was just saying this to someone earlier. I said, parenting is incredibly selfish and egotistical. Like, we think that by not giving to ourselves, by self-abandoning, we are like we just that whole self-care is selfish, giving to yourself is selfish. And I'm like, but really? Parenting is incredibly selfish. Like, I'm also observing that as my kids are getting older, they're like, what's your son doing? Where's he going to school? Who's he going to become? And I'm watching my own ego, my own self, mm-hmm. try to like protect it. But I'm like, ooh, I'm triggered, because if I say something and they're going to judge that, what does that say about me? And I'm like, this is not about me.
Right.
Like, that is another human having their own human experience. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, parenting is incredibly selfish if you don't get your ego in check.
I love that, because that's a way of flipping it on, like turning it over, because mm-hmm. so many parents, and particularly mothers, are mm-hmm. so concerned. I mean, they put themselves last, right? Because it is all for the kids. But to say, like, you're actually being selfish when in some respects they're being the opposite as they see it. Is that, have you found that's a way to sort of get some space and help your clients see it differently?
Well, I think sometimes we just need to put ourselves in, like, observing how we were parented, or observing, like, when we're looking at our situation, we're in it, like, we're too mm-hmm. close. But think about feeling like a burden, right? Like, if you were a child and your parents made you feel like a burden, like your mother said to you, I sacrificed everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
You owe me.
Yes.
And it's like, my children owe me nothing. I would never want my children to feel like my sacrifices were because of them and they owe me. It's like, no, I chose to do that because I wanted to, and there's no strings attached. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes parents will say to me, I can't do this because, and then they insert a person's name. It may be a child, it may be a partner, it may be someone else. And I'm like, how do you think that person feels knowing that you are, I say dying, because I like to be extreme, and that physically happened to me, but mm-hmm. mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially, you are self-abandoning to please that other person, but they're begging you to take care of yourself, because they that energy, like that burden that you're putting on somebody else by taking away from yourself, like people feel that. We carry that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I even look at my own parents and I'm like, please, please do this thing. If you don't do that, like, you are putting that on my backpack. I don't want to be a burden, but you are, because mm-hmm. you refuse to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so when we can put ourselves, like, as an adult in that situation, we can see it differently and go, how am I actually burdening my own children by yeah. not taking care of my emotional wellness, by saying, you know, by chronically yelling or projecting onto them? It gives you a different frame of reference, but it is incredibly counterintuitive to think,
yes,
wow, the better I feel, I am serving other people, because we're not taught that culturally.
Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole thing is like, can we be okay if our kids aren't okay? Right. Well, that saying, right. That saying, like, you're only as happy as your least happiest child, or something like that. It's like, and I know that my wife and I have a lot of conversations about this over the years. It's like, being okay, even when our kids aren't, is really hard, and mm-hmm. is really important though as well.
So I've really felt this the last few years, navigating, like, guiding my child, trying not mm-hmm. to control, but guide my child into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And obviously doing the work that I do, I have the self-awareness, but it doesn't mean it's not difficult. Where I've sat there going, oh, wow, I can actually see how codependent my identity is on my child's success. And then coming to terms with that, and then trying to, like, you know, remove yourself from that. I do believe there is, you know, the energy of others, or not allowing the energy of others to affect us. It's not, we're all connected. It's part of the way that we're created. We want belonging. We want connection. When those that we love are struggling, yeah, we feel it. But it does give you an opportunity to self-reflect and go, am I going to kind of keep going down this rabbit hole with this person? Because you're both going to sink. You're both going to drown. Or am I going to double down on how I want to feel and do that from an act of service or an act of love? And I noticed I really had to, like, you know, I would physically say, I see you're struggling and I so deeply just want to do the work for you, but I know I can't take this away from you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to create some space, work on myself, double down on my habits, double down on how I want to feel. And it's so counterintuitive, but it's so true. Like, I get to that place? Yes. Is it a lot of energy and effort? Yes. And I've seen that with my clients as well, especially when their kids get older and they're really struggling. They're like, I am now at a place where I am okay that my child is not okay. And that is true freedom. Doesn't mean you don't love them. Doesn't mean you don't care about them, but you're not going to sink with them. You actually have more energy and strength to hold them when they do come back.
So well said. It is so counterintuitive that getting to that place is actually healthy when parents who might be feeling that way might be thinking there's something wrong with them. Like, well, I'm focusing on my own life now. My child is struggling. There's nothing I can do about it, but that's their life. And there are parents who'll be looking in going, what do you mean? You're not going to do anything? You're not going to do more? Like, how could you go have fun when your child is blah, blah, blah? And it's like, yeah, this is so important. They are their own humans on their own journey, having their own human experience. And they did come through us, and I believe come through us for a reason. And we do our best, and we're figuring it out as we go. Like, we haven't done this before, right? I mean, maybe after our second or third, we've done it before at those parts of life because we've experienced that. But being a parent, having your first child go to adulthood, go off, this is all brand new, and we have to continue developing as humans ourselves because hopefully we have a lot of life left, and particularly a lot of life outside of the role of parenthood.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between abandonment and like completely cutting off your child versus connection. And I think there's people get confusion between quality versus quantity. So I work with a lot of people who are obsessed with time management. I need more time with my kids. And I'm like, but do you really? Like, what are you doing with that quality of time? And how can you create connection to another human being without being with them 24/7? It's about relationship. Like, a text message can go a long way. Sending, you know, if you're not physically living with a child, or I just think about my own parents, like, how do you create connection with your friends? This is about not completely avoiding someone and being like, you know, you do you. I can't handle this, versus like, I know you're struggling and I'm here when you're ready. Like, always know that I will be the first person here when you are ready, but I cannot do this work for you. There's so many ways that we can create connection versus avoidance because it's emotionally uncomfortable for us. And that's what I see a lot of people do. It's this all or nothing thinking. I'm either all in, I am obsessed, everything I do is for my child. And then you get burnt out and fatigued. And then you're like, oh, you know, I did my best. I don't know who you're becoming. I'm just going over here. It's like, we still need to be engaged. This is a lifelong relationship. This is not until they're 18 years old. And I think that's what parents need to learn, is what we're taught in the media about parenting. It's not about having, you know, everything you see on social media. It's about, how do you want to feel? How do you want your child to feel? And really walking this path with them, not necessarily knowing how to answer all the problems, but like advocating, using your voice, communicating. And the more you do on yourself, the more work you do on yourself, the more you can be present for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's start going there on this work you can do on yourself. And in this idea of overwhelm, right? We're talking about energy. You mentioned energy recently, like how to manage energy versus this idea of time. And first we have to start with the reality of many parents, many moms are overwhelmed. Many single parents and single mothers are overwhelmed. And then if we have kids who are neurodivergent, special needs, there's a whole extra load that I think only those who have been in that experience or are close to those in experience really understand. Mm-hmm. And so there's overwhelm abound. How does one start to take these steps in the midst of the overwhelm?
I am fascinated by humans and human behavior. And I'm always curious, like I'll give you my perspective of like why you can have two people and in similar situations and one person is thriving and the other person is not. And mm-hmm. so we have to realize, like, first of all, how I define overwhelm, it's a symptom. It is not a lifestyle. Just because it is culturally accepted and normal does not, I mean, sure, you can go into brain science and where overwhelm is and all the things. That's not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. But when I get overwhelmed, it is a sign for me to stop and realign. It is not, you know, when people are like, how are you? I'm overwhelmed. Like we're wearing it like a badge of honor. Oh, you must be so busy. Actually, I'm not. I have a full life and a full plate. But when I feel quote unquote busy or chronically overwhelmed or chronically fatigued, that is a sign that something is off. That is not like, okay, keep pushing, keep going, suck it up, buttercup. This is the way it is. So to me, I'm all about sustainability, and chronic overwhelm is not sustainable for me. I don't care what your children's needs are, what your professional like life looks like, you can realign. So going back a little bit, we're going to talk about like my cancer diagnosis, but pre-cancer diagnosis, there was a book that I read, and her name is Danielle Laporte, and her book was called The Desire Map. What I took away from that was it's not the thing you want, it's the feeling. Culturally, we go for goals, right? We're like, I want this, I want to check all. We live like a robot. I have a to-do list, boom, boom, boom. I have a goal list, boom, boom, boom. And then we just forget about ourselves and we're very robotic of like, just do, 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 do. There's no being, right? Being is, they think, happens after you retire. But if you don't have that skill, then you're going to have no idea how to actually feel and be. So it's not the thing you want, it's the feeling. Number one, I tell people to write down, wouldn't it be nice if, like as your journal prompt, wouldn't it be nice if, and whatever you want, like write it down, write it down, write it down. Could be something simple as, wouldn't it be nice if I could go for a walk? Wouldn't it be nice if I could have a glass of water? Wouldn't it be nice if, you know, we could move to this place? Wouldn't it be, like these are all desires inside of you. First of all, if you are going to chronically neglect your desires for anything, you're going to feel dead inside. So, or in chronically overwhelmed, like your brain is like, oh, this is too much energy input. If you refuse to look at that, you're going to keep doing what you're doing and eventually you'll burn out. So I had to stop and ask myself, what is it that I want? And then I had to ask myself, what's the actual feeling that I want behind that desire? So it was like abundance, freedom. Like nobody ever says, oh yeah, I want a glass of water. Why do you want a glass of water? Because I want to feel hydrated. Okay. I want to go outside and go for a long walk. Why? Because I want space. Like what is the feeling that you're after? Once I got to this feeling, I could, and there's multiple feelings. No one's like, I want to feel depleted. I want to feel chronically overwhelmed. We know how we want to feel.
Right.
I started, that was my North Star. My feelings became my goal. So although I still feel overwhelmed, although I still feel angry, resentment, all of that, I'm asking myself, why are you here? And what do I need to get back in alignment? And so now my focus is, how can I create more spaciousness? How can I? And that's the focus. It's not just about, well, I'm overwhelmed, let's accept it. It's getting clear on how you want to feel and then designing your life around that. Where I see people get really stuck is perfectionism because they're like, Heather, I'm doing the things and I'm still getting overwhelmed. And I'm like, great.
Right.
Does the sun go away? Does it rain sometimes? Do the clouds come up? Like this is nature. We get to experience both, but you have to kind of like fight for your joy because we do live in a culture that has this current, right? We have like the negativity bias and the current of like, chronically looking at what's not good, we will have to consciously refocus on how we do want to feel.
Yes. And you had mentioned a little ways back ego, which triggered for me. I often see it's like this tug of war between our ego and our higher self, in a sense, right? It's like the ego, that self-preservation mechanism in all of us, the thing that has all the wants, the desires, and the like the red badge of courage with the overwhelm. It's this fight, and I feel like you're talking about, in a sense, like our higher self, are like rising above all of the noise. And it's human to have this, all of that humanness, and to have this clarity about, wait, this is what I want. And then taking some time to dig in a little bit to see how can I achieve it, with the idea that I have free will. I can do something differently. I can choose something differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think accepting the tug of war is, you know, mastering the art of resistance and accepting that it's going to be there. So, example, this morning I woke up and I was like, I do not want to get out of bed today. And
even though I've got this really good podcast, I'm excited to go. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get
it. Now that I'm here, I am so grateful I got out of bed. But it was an energy. It was just the way that I was feeling, but it wasn't like, I knew that I could move that energy. And I also knew that if I moved, the energy would move. And so, but I wasn't judging myself like I used to. Like, I remember back in the day, I would wake up and be like, oh, not today. I'm not motivated. And now I just know that that feeling is cultivated. It may come today. It may come tomorrow. You know, it might take a little bit of momentum. But yeah, there's always this tug of war of resistance. And, I am very clear on not so much who I want to be, but I'm very clear on, I see life as a game now. I see my mind as a game. I see parenting as a game. I say a game, everything's a relationship, mm-hmm. but I have accepted that I have to consciously reach and grow and stretch if I want newness, if I want to feel proud of myself, if I want to create deeper connection. And the other thing I want to say about that is the edge of, okay, rinse and repeat, doing the same thing over and over again. And I'll hear people be like, I'm doing all the things, but like, I don't know. And I'm like, it's time to grow. You have to push your edge. You have to get emotionally uncomfortable. So sometimes, you know, waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, that's super easy for you. Actually giving yourself time to rest might be the emotionally uncomfortable part. Sleeping in might be the emotionally uncomfortable part. Doing a podcast might be emotionally uncomfortable. Like, you have to just stretch your newness. But constantly, I'm like, what do I want and desire? I literally have bullet points in my journal. I look at it weekly at least. And I'm chronically asking myself, are my actions getting me closer to this or further away? And if you are not like looking at your GPS of your final destination, you will end up in the middle of the woods somewhere. And it's very easy to see you get off track when you're not paying attention.
Are my actions aligned with my wants and desires and goals? And emotionally uncomfortable, you spend a lot of time talking about that in a lot of places, and for good reason, because we are so trained as humans to push off uncomfortable feelings. And of course, with our kids, we don't want them to feel that, because we don't want them to feel that. And then we don't want to feel how we feel when they're feeling uncomfortable as well. And the magic sauce is actually having the courage and awareness to lean into them and realize you're going to be okay. Like, uncomfortable feelings are uncomfortable and at times excruciating, but they're survivable. And I feel like it builds resilience to know that you can weather a very difficult storm, but that to know that you can, to keep those two things, this is really hard, this really sucks, and I know I can get through this, and I know I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, cancer taught me this. I had to sit in my crap all the time. I couldn't run away from it. I didn't have the energy to run away from it. And I will tell you one thing that I think personal development does wrong is we've put a negative label on feeling, and we're trying to take the humanness out of being human, whether it's for us, whether it's our children, and it's just not possible. You can definitely experience more joy in your life, but part of being emotionally uncomfortable, my podcast used to be called Mom is in Control because women were like, I'm a mm-hmm. mother, I want to control. And I was like, control is not a feeling. You want to control externally people's behaviors, the way you look, all the things, because you feel out of control internally. And so if you want to feel joy, ease, abundance, aliveness, you also have to feel the opposite of that, your deepest fears, your deepest wounds, mm-hmm. Sadness, grief, all of it. And if you're trying to push things away or lock them up, like feeling is a language and you can play with both, but we've been taught to do. We have not been taught to be. Mm-hmm. And it can feel vulnerable when you first start. So it's definitely a journey.
So I'm overwhelmed as a parent and I don't have a lot of time and I'm depleted and I'm frustrated and I'm worried. How do I start to look at it differently and think about my energy versus my very limited time? Or my perception of very limited time.
Yeah. Well. I was going to say, well, me too. Yeah. Like I still experience all of those things. I just process them quicker. And so number one is going back to like what I said first is, wouldn't it be nice if, like, write that down in your journal, give yourself 2 minutes. If that's all you have, write it in your phone. If you have no capacity for, you're like, I can't even see how I could write that down. And just look at that list and then go, what's the feeling that I'm after? And there's something that I call the 10-minute habit. People are like, I don't have time. I don't have time. Like, do you have 10 minutes? Sometimes they're like, no, I don't have 10 minutes. I'm like, well, you just spent 10 minutes telling me about your problem. So you actually do have 10 minutes. You just spent an hour scrolling. It's just being stuck in complaining about the problem versus the actual doing. And then when you start taking action, your brain is going to tell you this is not going to create change because you have no certainty that change is possible, right? So I'm like, start with whatever you want to do. If you're like, I want space. Well, what would space be to you? And you're like, I don't know. Well, think about it. What do you think would allow you to feel spacious? I had to do this back in the day when I was diagnosed and I was like, I want to feel alive. I had no evidence in my life of what aliveness felt like. I was used to feeling chronically overwhelmed, depleted, worried, anxious. So I had to ask myself how, like, people who look happy, look alive, what are they doing? And I didn't know. I had to be like the detective, but I had to start taking action. And so some of those people were, I would see them walking down the street and I'd be like, that looks boring. Why would someone do that? And so I physically put it on my calendar, go for a 10-minute walk. Mm-hmm. And I would do the 10-minute walk and I'm like, that didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. But I just had to trust the process and I kept doing it over and over and over again. And then that led to something else and something else. And so you have to physically create space for these things 10 minutes at a time. And then you have to do the thing. If you mm-hmm. are bypassing the doing and you're just like, it's not working, you're not doing the thing. So this is where resistance leans in. And if you... The last thing I want to say is you get to keep what you defend. I'm at a point in my own personal journey, especially when I'm working with people, I'm like, I'm not here to rescue you. I can't, right? Mm-hmm. I so badly want to change. I like help people change, but you have to help yourself. And if you are chronically defending why you chronically feel like crap, why you're so overwhelmed, why you can't do something, you get mm-hmm. to keep that story. And so observe what you're also defending. Observe what you get defensive about when you're like, Don't tell me I can do this. Don't tell me to do that. And it's like, you get to keep it. Why are you hanging on so tightly to that part of yourself? So once you have the awareness of like, wow, I'm very defensive about that. I wonder why I don't want to let it go. That's where we can soften a little bit and start to open up.
Yeah. The scheduling, the 10 minutes triggered a memory several years ago when our kids were young and I was a newer psychologist and building the practice and money was tight and just going on all cylinders and everywhere. And I was talking to my therapist and over, I'd be like, I don't have time for lunch. I don't have time to regularly exercise. And he finally just looked at me and he said, what I want you to do is I want you to schedule exercise in your day, just like you would a client, and schedule a time for lunch. It was so simple. And it changed everything. Actually, you know, and then I couldn't talk about that anymore. I like that, that wasn't a topic anymore because I took what we will call now aligned action once that awareness happened and then created that space for me because he helped me realize how important that was for my health, my relational health, my kids, my practice. Like it was necessary for me to have those things. And some of these things just seem so simple, but because of our human nature, and again, the overwhelm, just being like, I'm so busy, I'm so busy, I'm so busy. And people are like, oh my God, you're so busy. You know, it just gets reinforced. And this is where you're saying, no, stop, stop. This isn't cool. This isn't good for you. No one's winning. There's nothing to be proud of. Let's start focusing on yourself.
Oh yeah. And then when you put that thing on your calendar and you keep abandoning that task, that's a whole other conversation. Because I see myself and when I'm telling people like, okay, now you're going to put it on the calendar because there's a whole energetic time management process I bring people through. Okay, you put it on the calendar. They're like, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, why? Because it might not get done. And then their perfectionism comes up. Or they're like, I'm now not going to have time to get everything else done. I'm like, but you're not. So when you realize that you are in time debt, you need to create a more sustainable life. And maybe your business model is changing. Maybe, you know, what you're saying yes to changes. But then you get to that point where you're like, okay, food. Oh my gosh, it's on the calendar. And you're like, I don't want to do this. Then you're like, oh, I run away from resistance. Like then you're developing a deeper connection with your relationship. This also brings up conversations I have all the time with people. They're like, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this. I'm like, but you had time to talk to me for an hour. Like, and then I've even done where I take it to the next level and I'm like, cool, we're not going to talk today. We're going to do the work that you're avoiding doing. They don't like that.
No, they don't. I like that. That is good. And you know, what you're saying is just how much of our life is perception. Right. Yeah. It's a perception of what is going on for us. And to go back to good old Sigmund Freud back in the day about how, you know, awareness is really in many ways kind of that old psychodynamic, psychoanalytic thing is trying to bring the unconscious conscious. And what you're doing is trying to help people become, have more conscious awareness of where they're resisting, where they are denying, where they are avoiding. And again, this is when it gets emotionally uncomfortable to look at that stuff. But for everyone listening, like this is where, this is the gold. Like this is where the possibilities begin when you have this awareness about yourself that is uncomfortable and you realize, oh, I am doing this. It's not being done to me. I am doing this.
Yeah. And nothing will get you there quicker than taking action. Because I find what I had to learn was talking, you know, coming from the that therapeutic model background, there's a lot of talking. And I'm like, okay, talking is not solving this problem. I need to start doing. And the second you know what you want and you start walking towards it, if you want to find what you need to heal, it will come up real quick, real quick. And so, and the work is never done. So it's, there's this constant co-creation. And then of course there's self-acceptance and all the things along the way. And circling back to the whole parenting conversation, when we're observing our children going through the exact same thing, we realize this is part of being human. There's no fixing. There's no perfection here. We're both growing and walking alongside each other.
And I had to quote you before we do end today. And the quote is, balance is bullshit. Right? This whole idea of we want balance. We want, you know, to have this work-life balance. And we're sold a bill of goods. Like, that's not, that doesn't work that way.
Well, you can tell someone's perception when they're asking that question. It's coming from a place of perfection and as if that exists. So for me, it's always been alignment, and even being out of alignment, my goal is just don't stay out of alignment for too long. So have rules with yourself. Okay, this week feels out of alignment. Great. Let it just be a week, not a month, not a year, not a decade. I don't want to be in that misalignment too long. Then it becomes my identity.
So you've given several ideas, several of your strategies that you use personally and with your clients with success. So for the parent out there who's listening because they have intention and they are overwhelmed. And those of you listening, you are not alone. We are all overwhelmed and have periods of overwhelm. What is one first step that you would recommend?
Get clear on how you want to feel. The first thing that comes to your mind, that feeling, let that be the goal. And chronically ask yourself, what do I need to do to get closer to that feeling? And you may like think, I don't know. You do know. Sometimes the resistance of I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Again, it's a mask. It's just like, it could, whatever you want to call it, could be ego, defensiveness. I also like to ask myself, if I did know, what would the answer be? Or what advice would I give a friend or a client? And then I have to have the courage to take the action to get me closer to that goal or that feeling.
Yes. And wouldn't you say that when people say, I don't know, often they immediately know, but they don't think it's possible. So then they don't even entertain it instead of just going with it.
Well, I know I do that to myself because I think, oh, someone else has a better answer. They're the expert. And a lot of the work that I do is because I don't want to create codependency. A lot of the work that I do with people is to empower them. And so I actually say, I know the answer I'd like to tell you, but I'm curious, what do you think you should do? And I won't actually give them any support until they give me what I call like I didn't create this, but it's like the first shitty draft. Like, give me your plan. Give me your, how do I talk to my partner about this? What do I say to my child? Well, what do you think you should say? Write down a script and then I'll give you feedback on it. Always lead yourself first and then ask for feedback from other people.
Yes. And everyone listening, even the experts feel that others have expert advice. We question ourselves. So.
Oh, I did that a lot last year in other areas. Like when you are chronically working in one area of your life, you're like, I got this. But then building a business, you're like, I'm not an expert in marketing or sales or this or this. And then I'm like, I've been at this for 10 plus years. I know I'm not an expert, but why do I think I know nothing?
Right.
And so I had to come back to, if I just trusted myself, how would I show up? And guess what? Magic things happen. All of a sudden it starts working.
They do. Magic is abound. We just have to open up and put some intention out there. And as you are saying, ask ourselves these tough questions and vision. It's a step. It's a first step. Okay, Heather, it's time for the parent footprint moment question that you have been waiting for. Okay, here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and or those you love.
I feel like there has been so many moments like this. I can't remember. This is about me realizing that my parents were just children in adult bodies. And it gave me a lot of emotional freedom to stop projecting my own sadness onto them or wanting to change them. It was actually with my father once when I was going through treatment. I remember one day he just didn't know how to create connection with me. And he just sat next to my bed asking me questions of like, can I do this? Can I do that? And I could just see this small child seeking advice or seeking permission from me. He was trying so hard to figure out how to save me, rescue me, and didn't know how to process his own emotion. And I started observing him and my mother as like just small, emotionally immature children in adult bodies. And our relationship completely changed, where my expectations evolved and I didn't put so much pressure on them and accepted who they were as people, instead of me trying to change them in my mind or be angry and resentful. And yeah. And we just realized we're all going through our life just kind of acting out from our little child selves.
Yeah. And again, with your parents had never done that before. They've never gone through that before. And for a variety of reasons, of course, we know how difficult that is. And I'm guessing for other reasons, it was difficult for them. And for us to see people as they are, right? That like see others as they are, this whole idea of acceptance, accept ourselves, accept our kids, accept others, how much tension and turmoil and distress and frustration can just slip away if we can see it through that lens.
Yeah. Yeah. But then we got to feel our own feelings.
Oh, yes. And get emotionally uncomfortable. Yes. For those of you who can't see Heather and her beautiful studio there, it says on this beautiful green, it looks like leafy wall. It looks for it's there's some tech green texture. There is this big lit up, beautifully cursive sign, emotionally uncomfortable, because that's this, I guess this is where the magic happens. This is where the magic of your podcast happens.
Oh yeah. I talk a lot about there on parenting and alignment and I would say balance, but it's just about feeling alive and aligned and what to do. So yeah, on the podcast.
Thank you for sharing yourself, your story, your experience, your wisdom with all of us. And you really are, you're a powerful force out there speaking the truth and really pulling down all of this perfectionistic ideas and programming that we have by putting yourself out there in just such a real and authentic way in the conversations you have on your podcast with others who are doing the same. It's just so refreshing.
Thank you, Dan. And keep doing the work, because the world knows we all need more of this. So thank you.
We do. Tell everyone where to find your podcast, where to find your book, all the things that you are up to.
So just go to my website, Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com. You're going to get free resource. There's free resources, the podcast, the book, all the links are there to find them.
And we'll be hitting 10 million soon. Check it out. Lots of good stuff. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our community. Thank you for your reviews and sharing this episode with everyone you know who will benefit, which I believe is everyone that you know. Just a reminder again, if you listen to our podcast on the Apple Podcast app, there's a few changes with the iOS 17 update. Head over to Apple Podcasts and click the follow button, and the new episodes will be automatically downloaded each week. As you probably heard, Apple has paused downloads on podcasts if your phone is running out of storage or if you haven't listened in a while. and then you're going to miss stuff. So be sure there's space available so you continue to receive your weekly episodes and don't miss anything. Thank you all for being you. You know what I'm going to ask you to do? Two things. Try to be that person you want your child to become and ask yourself that guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.